Welcome to the IT Experience Podcast. This is a podcast for those who are interested in IT experience management in large enterprises. If you use ServiceNow or other enterprise service management system to provide services to employees, then this is for you. Brought to you by Happy Signals. More smiles, less time wasted.
Welcome to the Happy Signals Podcast. Today we have a special guest with us on the podcast. We have Dr. Selena Fisk. Dr. Selena Fisk is someone who I first heard on the Data Camp podcast, where she spoke about her book, I Am Not a Numbers Person. And first of all, Selena, would you like to introduce yourself and a little bit maybe tell about why you chose to write your book, I Am Not a Numbers Person?
Sure. Hi, thanks for having me. So my book, I'm Not a Numbers Person, has come out of probably about 15 years worth of work of using data and thinking about how the use of data can inform good decisions. So my background is actually, I used to be a secondary maths and physical education teacher. And so my journey with data actually started looking at learning analytics and student achievement and looking at ways that we could adapt and modify teaching that was happening in our classrooms, but also across the department and then the whole school to, I guess, create change and lead improvements in student learning. And over time, I did that in the UK, I moved back to Australia and I completed my Doctor of Education, which was in the use of data and the use of student perceptions and feedback and how we close that feedback loop to students and what data we provide them. And then I realized that there was just a significant gap between what was being expected of teachers and, I guess, the skill and the ability of people to use data. What I have now realized and in the last couple of years is that that challenge and that gap between the expectations and reality is not just limited to education. And so now I'm self-employed. I work with a range of different corporate organizations. I work still with a lot of schools, but ultimately I say I'm a data storyteller and a grounded researcher, and I help organizations make better sense of the data that they've got access to. So my book, I'm Not a Numbers Person, was sort of, it was a natural progression of all of the work that I've been doing, hopefully getting to a wider audience, but really for me, communicating that understanding of we can all get better with the use of numbers. And increasingly, the use of data is not just limited to business intelligence teams or analysts in organizations. Everybody actually needs to have a pretty good understanding of what the numbers mean and how they can use them to inform their work.
The audience of this podcast is mostly comprised of IT professionals in big enterprises. And IT today is a very numbers-led industry. But there's a lot of different data points to look out for and think about when you do your work. This is something that you also speak about, the sheer number of different metrics. You want to speak about a little bit about how that might impact work and what kind of challenges that might introduce.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a problem that exists everywhere. There are so many different sets of data and types of information that are consistently being added into organizations that we're not often removing things or taking them out. And I think it's with the best intentions and people are trying to do the right thing, but with developments in technology and new ideas and new improvement, journeys, there's all of these different things that almost stack up on top of one another just to create this massive ocean of data that we find ourselves in. That, for me, I often talk about the difference between qualitative and quantitative data. And quantitative is great because it's numerical and it tells us, we can get average values, we can look at spread, we can look at median results, we can look at the highest and lowest scores, like that's really good. The problem with quantitative data is it doesn't tell us the why and doesn't explain what's going on. And so qualitative data are questions that have categories, for example, or open-ended text boxes. And I know within your organization, you use a combination of qualitative and quantitative data. And if anything, from what I've seen so far today, if you're leaning quite heavily on the qualitative data, which is great, because what that does is it enables you to actually understand what's going on rather than just a score. So I often use the example of, say, Google reviews. If you're looking for good coffee, you can easily work out that one cafe is a 4.5 out of five and another one's a 4.2 out of five. But it's the comments that people leave in Google reviews that explain why they've given the score that they have. And so I guess the challenge that we've got is we have all of these different metrics, qualitative and quantitative. And the problem is often that organizations and teams haven't had the opportunity to zoom out and think about, hang on, what do we actually care about? What do we value? And then how do we articulate those expectations to one another and to other members of our team? So I often think about organizations and data plans and people like your listeners of this podcast as being a really key part of a funnel. So the very top of the funnel is all the different types of data that you've possibly got available. And coming up with a data plan and having a good understanding as a team and an organization about what you value narrows that funnel and narrows the metrics down to a smaller group. The problem is you could spend days, weeks, months trawling through all of the different types of information that you've got access to. But until you decide and collectively make some decisions about what's actually most important to you, then you're not going to be able to lead change, because you'll be getting stuck in the weeds of navigating your way through all of these hundreds of different data sets rather than having some real clarity around what you should be collecting and then how that's expected to be used in your teams and your organization.
You speak about clarity there. So might have the leadership to some level deciding on what those important numbers are. But what would be your recommendation or your observations on how do you get sometimes hundreds or thousands of people who are not so familiar with how those metrics were selected and set up? How do you get them to then act in a way that you would desire based on that data, being data informed when they work and try to achieve those commonly decided outcomes?
Yeah, it's tricky because I guess where this is done well, the data plan and that structure and clarity comes from the top and it filters down. And senior leaders would work with middle managers, and those middle managers would work with members of their team, and people would be involved in the construction of the part of the data plan that relates to them. That doesn't always happen. And I've worked with some organizations where a specific team has decided, okay, we're going to sit down and make some decisions about data and what that looks like for us. But I guess the main part in a good data plan that is in an organization of hundreds or thousands of employees is the sections or the groupings of people within that data plan. So you don't have one data plan that applies to every person in the organization. Because as executives in your company, you might use the same metrics, say overall happiness score, that might be useful as something to keep a track of. But we also know that that one single global number hides a whole lot of data that sits underneath it. Whereas if you were a team leader of a team who were working directly with customers, you would potentially be more interested maybe in the same metric, but how it relates to just your team and to your specific colleagues. And your actions would then be related to maybe professional development opportunities, conversations that you have. And that's a really different use of that same metric and the same data than, say, what your executives would be doing at the top. So while it means that a data plan for a huge organization would be a lot bigger, it is important to have a look at what does the executive value, what are they looking at, how are they using it? You know, you might have your like finance team, for example, your technical teams, like all of the different, you know, regional teams, what's true for one country might not be true in another country. Being able to break it down into those sections is really valuable because it also acknowledges that two people in the same organization don't necessarily use and value the same data, and that's actually okay. And we need to be able to normalize that and explain why that's the case. But the other thing about having a data plan that has all of those sections, it means that if I'm working in a team in a one country in your corporation, I can see the whole data plan. I understand what's happening for the whole organization, but I could take my piece that applies to me, and then that's the part that I can action. So if the document ends up being 20 pages long, I might end up with one or two pages that are relevant for me and my job, but I can see the connections that my work and my action with data has on everybody else's roles and how they use the information differently. It's a challenge. It's certainly something that I'm seeing around the world, that more and more companies are looking to write data plans. And as I say, I think it's actually a really useful process for people to go through the thinking of what actually matters to us and what do we want to be paying attention to.
And thinking about those data plans, then what's the different levels? You speak about different levels of data literacy to be able to use that data and how you actually apply that in the daily work. You want to just briefly go through what those levels are and what they mean?
Yeah, so when we talk about people's use of data, there are certainly different levels of skill. And I talk about three big things. I usually talk about data literacy first. So people actually need to understand the metric. They need to understand what the value means. And they need to understand whether it's, or what's high, what's middle, what's low. And that's where some of the benchmarking and heat map kind of color-coded visualizations help build that data literacy. The second one's around people's ability to read visualizations. And I mean, you've got a lot of hopefully very data and tech savvy users and listeners who are very good at that. But what I see in other organizations is that there's sometimes a lot of assumptions made about people's ability to understand the numbers and then to read the visuals. But the goal is to get to data storytelling. And that's where we think about the insights. And then we think, okay, well, if they're the insights that are coming out of the data, then what do I do about that information and those insights? Now, I believe that in a data plan, we should actually be explaining some of the insights, what we're hoping people would be looking for as a part of the data plan. So we're not talking about a data schedule of what we collect and when we collect it. This is actually, what do we want people to be looking for? And then what do we want them to be doing with that information once they get it? Because we don't want them just looking at lovely information and walking away and not acting on it. The reason why I think that those two columns are really vital, and it is in my book, and you're welcome to kind of share a version of that with the podcast if you would like to. The reason why I think that's really vital is because we have this, I guess, level up of different people's skill. And if I'm really struggling with the use of data, or data's really new to me, I want the data plan to give me some guidance as to how to use that information. So we've got people who are very, very good operators, who understand the numbers, who can read the visualizations, who are taking action. But we need to be thinking about, and not assuming that everybody's at that level, but thinking about the people who struggle with it and find it harder. So I, in my book, I have a model where there's six levels. And it's unconscious, conscious users, casual, aware, active users, and then reflective. And those six levels, and there's descriptions in there that you can have a bit of a read of if you like, but it goes from, you know, I think about my grandparents being really unconscious users of data. They're just completely oblivious to all of the numbers and the data that's out there. But we get to conscious, where there's some idea, but we're not engaging, we're not interested, but we know that it exists. Casual users might just be using a handful of metrics or relying on one or two things. They've got a pretty superficial, top level kind of understanding of some of the metrics. And then we start getting into the space where people become aware of what's possible and all of the different opportunities that they've got, and start to make some decisions about how they're using data in their role, through to active users. So they're starting to respond to the information they're seeing. And then the people at the highest level are really responsive. So they look at new data coming in, they want to act on it, they try new things. The complexity is that, you know, we're dealing with humans and systems, neither of which are perfect and simple. So one metric doesn't mean one solution and then one improved output at the other end. So people in that highest, that reflective stage, they're really thinking about, in schools, we call it like an action research cycle, being really open to new data, having a hypothesis, testing something out, seeing if that improves. And if it doesn't, being okay with coming back and going, okay, well, that wasn't successful. What could I try? What might work for me next? I know we're talking about data plans a lot, and that kind of wasn't in the original plan for this podcast episode, but I think it does guide people. It provides opportunities for people at those lower levels to get some ideas about how do we use the information, or what are we looking for in the data that we care about, and then what do we actually want people doing with it, and how do we want them using it?
Fantastic. I think our listeners will really, really appreciate these insights. And one thing that we maybe could go into, so you have these people that are aware, active, and reflective, but the fact that they are, and that we might be looking at it, but there might be still some lost opportunities that you speak about when we look at the evidence that the data provides to you, and then the inaction or the action that you take based on that data. So what do you see sort of being the keys to understanding how that evidence versus action dynamic works?
Yeah, so one of the other models in my book is a quadrant model. So there's the horizontal axis is to do with action. So inaction on the left and action on the right. And then the vertical axis is a lot of evidence at the top and then use of no evidence at the bottom. And the goal is to get to the point where we're using evidence and acting. And when we do that, we're able to have an impact. Now, I certainly work with people who are in that category, and I see people like that all the time. I haven't yet worked with a whole organization that I would say would be in that space. Most people that I work with are in the lost opportunity quadrant, which is where we've got access to so much evidence and information. Maybe even we understand it and we know what it means, but we're not necessarily taking action from it. So, you know, earlier I mentioned the filter idea. So all of these data sets, you and your data plans and the clarity you're providing to employees helps funnel down that information. You might have a dashboard that is exactly what you need. It's the data that's most relevant to your team. All of that's great. The final part of that funnel is then building people's ability to identify insights and then connect it to what they'll do about it. So Gary Klein is a psychologist who wrote a book about insights. It's called Seeing What Others Don't. And he says that an insight is not information. An insight is something that shifts our perspective. So it actually changes our way of thinking. So when you have a brilliant dashboard, it's got lots of great information on that dashboard, and there's lots of bits that you could take out of it. It's not all insightful, though. So a key part of people being able to take action is to think, okay, of the data I've been given, what is an insight to me? What's something that surprises me? What's something that is different to what I would expect? What's a data point that's really jumping out or standing out to me? And then the actions that we take should be related to those insights. So again, it's part of that funnel, that very last part, where we can set up really good structures at an organizational level for people, but then we need to be thinking about how do we actually build capacity in them to identify those things that matter. The challenge with insights is that what I see in a dashboard would be different to the next person. There would be similarities in what stands out as insights. But insights are very much influenced by our experience and our background and our biases. So opportunities in teams for people to sit around and talk about those insights is also really important, because what I see as an insight might be really important and valid to me, but I may be the only person in my team. So being able to talk collaboratively and collectively about what matters to us and what can we actually do something about, then you can kind of make some decisions about action as a team. And that allows people to get from that lost opportunity into impact.
If we think about these groups of people looking at the data and thinking about what do we see in this? Do you see there being value in having a diversity of different backgrounds so that you would be fostering an environment where those different points of view would come up?
Yeah, absolutely. That's really important. Because as I said, the insights are really different depending on our backgrounds, and our cognitive biases play a significant role in what we see. So the more diversity we can have on teams, absolutely, the better. There's a really good example. I'm Australian, obviously, you can tell by my accent. And I went to Uluru, which is the large rock in the middle of Australia, a couple of months ago. And he was the ranger that we had that was walking us around Uluru, and he was telling us all of these stories. He was his First Nations Australian, and he was talking to us about the stars. And he said, when you as a white person look at the stars, you think about constellations, you think about, for us, we see there's a constellation we see called the Southern Cross, which is, you can see from Australia. And he said that those are the things that you see through your lens. He said, as a First Nations man, I look at the stars and I can see when the emu's belly is full of eggs, and I can see when the fish are being pushed towards the shore and when we should fish. And so when provided with the exact same data, it was just a beautiful example of how different people can see completely different things in the same information based on all of their background and those experiences and what they bring to the conversation. So yeah, absolutely, diversity is really key.
And is that diversity in the people looking at the data one thing that is valuable? But how do you see the diversity of available data to people, the number of data sets? This is something I think if I remember correctly, the data camp that people in organizations might have something like 40 to 50 different data sets that are supposed to understand and act upon. What's the guidance then on the sheer number of different data points? And is there a point in simplifying and trying to find sort of guiding principles for the organization to act upon so that it leads to action and doesn't just become a beautiful dashboards?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a really key part of the data plan, because you would be articulating for a specific team. You might identify 10 to 15 metrics, which is better than maybe the 50 to 60 that you might have access to. I guess it's about aligning with what the values of the organization are as well. So the data sets that you're saying as a team are most important to you, or as an organization, they need to be really closely aligned with purpose and what you're aiming to do as a company. So for example, for me, understanding, you know, there was something you shared with me before about humans are the best sensors. I love that, because it sends a really clear message to me that what you as an organization value is actually that human-centric data, and it's people's perceptions and people's experience. Doesn't mean that you discount the quantitative, but as a team, they're the things that you're actually placing higher value on than on-time performance or turnaround time or whatever it might be. So yeah, I think going into any of those meetings where you're talking about the data, you'd like to think that the decisions that have been made about what matters and how we narrow that last bit of the funnel, those decisions ideally should have been made beforehand. And so the dashboard is then just the things that matter to you and the things that you can action and you can have an impact on, because you know there are metrics in organizations, like in hotels, the number of rooms that cleaning staff can do in an hour, or how many in a day they can turn around. You know, that's not necessarily useful or actionable information to people at the front desk. So really important metric, but different means different things to different people. So it's about what can you actually influence in your work.
That's really good. I really like the way that you present things in a very, very simple and understandable way. And I think that our listeners would too. So what would be the best way of finding a little bit more information about your thinking, maybe reading your books? What's the best way to find you online?
Yeah, so I'm on LinkedIn as Dr. Selena Fisk, but my website, selenafisk.com, has a few different articles that I've written. There's a page on there with a few of those articles that you could check out if you're interested.
Perfect. And we'll definitely put in the show notes a link to the book that you can order on Amazon or any other bookshop online, and also to a page where on your website where you have other appearances in podcasts and shows, so that people can hear more about your research.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
No worries at all. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And as we do at the end of each podcast episode, we wish you to stay safe and stay happy. Thank you.
You too. Bye.
If you like this episode, giving the podcast a review helps others find this content as well. You can also visit our YouTube channel or our learning center at happysignals.com for some more video content. Join hundreds of like-minded IT professionals who have passed the free ITXM certification course on itxm.academy.